Support for the Players, the Pop Culture as PlayStation podcast, is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the ultimate men's hygiene bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FTP at au.manscaped.com. If my math is correct, and it might just be, that's about 8 million balls.
For the Players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For the Players, the Pop Culture as PlayStation podcast for 40 years of playing PlayStation and 10 plus years in that games media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to tuck back, apparently. But if you want to join us as the conversation happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you are watching us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopcultures, as well as our merchandise store, popcultures.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. Additionally, you can also help support the brands that help support us, just like Manscaped. Yeah, if you use the promo code FTP over at au.manscaped.com.au, just .com, get yourself 20% off and free worldwide shipping. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Max, I'm going to start the show with what is sad news. So earlier today, probably about an hour or so ago at the time of recording, I was playing some games, pulled up my Twitter, and I noticed a post from 3 minutes ago from the Foo Fighters. They have announced that their drummer, Taylor Hawkins, has passed away at the age of 50. So I know this is obviously a PlayStation show. It's not a show about fucking music or the Foo Fighters, but I don't know what it is, but for some reason this one kind of fucked me up. So I had a little bit of a sneaky cry here in the studio as I was playing here on the monitors, and I don't know why this one just hit me harder. Whether it was the proximity of knowing that they were in town like 2 weeks ago here in Geelong, or like, you know, the Foo Fighters do. I have been listening to them for years. One of the first bands that my uncle and I connected on. I don't know. It's just, and then it's that, and he just, you know, he seems like such a good dude. And then you sort of see, you know, the energy between him and Dave Grohl, you know, and then just to see that energy sort of gone. I don't know. Like, celebrity passings don't normally hit me. There's only ever been a couple that have really fucked me up. And I didn't expect this to be one of them. So, yeah. I don't know. I always want to talk about that because it's important to me apparently today. Like, I was already what I felt emotionally compromised today for some reason. And then I guess that pushed me over the line. So, yeah, I'm a bit sad by that. I know it means absolutely nothing, but at least from myself, you know, I wish all the best to the, you know, Dave and, everyone at the Foo Fighters, as well as his wife, his kids and his family. Fucked up. Because I know that Max, you're pretty shitty at the Foo Fighters because they.
I like the way you just instantly fucking. You have this sad, sentimental thing, and then you fucking throw me under the bus, being like, Max fucking hates the Foo Fighters because they cancelled his plans that one time. So he's been cursing him and bloody sticking pins in his voodoo doll, and look what's happened now.
That's all right. Max wanted to see Nitro Circus.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Absolutely no worries at all. But yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, look, because, yeah, I'm just, trying to lighten the mood because, you know, being sad isn't always fun. But, yeah, has there ever been a celebrity death that's really, like, messed with you?
I don't think so. Not that I can recall.
Yeah, there's been like a couple for me. Robin Williams was a big one because I grew up with Robin Williams a lot. And
probably Robin Williams. I think at the time my housemates and I we did a movie marathon of his greatest, which is a hard pick because you know they're all brilliant.
Yeah. Robin Williams was rough. I grew up with him a lot. There's a lot of behavioral similarities between him and my own father, which makes it even harder because it felt pretty close. Chris Cornell was another one, a singer of Audioslave and Soundgarden. Chester Bennington was another one, which was one buddy just dropped in the chat as well, the singer of Linkin Park. One of the other big ones was Ryan Dunn. From Jackass, and CKY, they're probably the ones that have actively hurt the most, which is really, really weird because of the whole parasocial relationship that people have with celebrities or brands or whatever.
Probably the most recent one would be Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, Chadwick. Yeah, that was rough, just because you knew he was fighting behind the scenes and stuff like that.
Mm.
And,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I guess the suddenness of this one is probably the most shit. But yeah, other than that, how has your week been? Please tell me it's been good because we need the uplift right now.
No, it's been a pretty sucky week. My uncle passed this week. So I've had the last couple of days off work trying to get through that.
How are you doing?
I've been doing okay. It's hard because, you know, my mum's dealing with it. On the other side of the country, and there's nothing I can really do. I was planning on flying back this weekend, but things kind of got in the way, and it unfortunately wasn't possible. But you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Well, condolences to your own family. Don't worry about the family of some celebrity. Condolences to your own family and to yourself.
What about you? How's your week been? Please tell me.
It has been flat the fuck out. So we're hiring at my workplace. So we had interviews on Monday, which were great. Turns out Paris, my colleague, he has the flu. And then I watched him progressively get shitter throughout Monday, which is inconvenient, but it was fun for me because I'm watching him trying to conduct interviews and I'm like, I'm watching a man die in front of me. Which then caused us to reschedule the other interviews that we had.
I'm just going to cut you off real quick.
Fuck my complaining about my work days. Kumquat in the chat, trying to lighten the mood. I'm pregnant and I felt my baby move for the first time this week. Holy actual fuck. That is amazing, Kumquat. Like, you know, we're both parents ourselves. Remember being there, with the mothers of our children at the time. And that's such a phenomenal experience. Like, I remember trying to get Millie to articulate it. And she says, it's can't. It's like butterflies. It's really weird. Do you remember being there?
Me? You talking to me?
Yeah, for Ellie.
Yeah, I remember it. She's like, quick, come over. And then instant stops. I'm like, you son of a...
You said what I loved a lot, especially later in the term when James, or Peanut as we affectionately called him at the time, was able to like just strong boot the fuck around. I used to be able to like poke her belly in certain spots and he would start kicking me. Ton of fun. He used to poke and just like, pff, pff, pff. I'm like, yeah, my little dude. Buddy jumps in from the discussion before. It's the way people etch these people into parts of our identity. Growing up with a lot of these celebrities/artists in your formative years means that there is a kind of bond with them. Yeah, very much so. Very, very much so. And that's probably the big part is, you know, we are, our influences are very, very important in who we are and who we become. So I it's certainly understandable. Come Quadgrass, thanks guys, pretty amazing. I can't believe it is real. Very much so. I remember during James's with James it didn't seem real until he was born, and then it got real super fast. Because I think I've talked about it on the show here before, at least in some one of our content at some point, I was told I could never have kids. I would never father a child. But literally, medically, it couldn't happen. Jokes on them, I did. But that also meant, and my wife is very skillful in dodging feeling. Like, in terms of, we didn't realize until at least, like, the first trimester was done. She's like, I've had my period in like fucking 3 months. I'm like, that's not good. So, you know, we missed a big hunk of it. We didn't really get to experience a full term. It was real like 6 months at best. So it all happened real quick. So it wasn't enough time to really process it being real. And then when he was born, it was like, fuck, this is super real now. So, it is kind of insane to literally create something out of absolutely nothing. You don't agree with that, Max?
Yes. I agree. I thought you were going to add more to that.
No, nothing.
I was waiting for you to finish.
No, nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, kumquat 9 months is not long.
Yeah, 9 months is so fast.
It's honestly not. Yeah,
sorry, in the chat, they've jumped in. Yeah, we have been trying for 2 years. This feels very special. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's...
And then you'll wake up one morning and they're 5 years old.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at right now. My son is in school now. And you're like... And I'm thinking, nothing will make you face your own mortality like a child. Like, holy fuck.
My kid's just over two now and she's just started talking. And I looked at my wife. We're in the car. And all she does now is talk in the car. And I looked at my wife and I'm like, sometimes I really miss the days where she can't talk. now that she can talk back.
Yeah. It's a rough time.
It's like Hadley, stay with us. No, fuck you, Dad. And just runs and across.
Bugs it. Yeah. Oh, man. You wait. You pace. You're like, come on. Start walking. Fantastic. Fuck. Stop walking. Stop. You know, please be. When they're a baby and they're just stuck in one spot, you can do almost anything. And you can be like, oh, you're not going to go anywhere. Like, you lay them down, you play games, you go in the other room, you do what you got to do. The second they become mobile, you're like, all right, cool. Turn around and they're fucking gone.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, it's gnarly. Even now, I'm like, where the fuck did he go? And it could be anywhere. But so now, because he's five, he just climbs shit. So I just go, I'm like, I can't just look, you know, down anymore. I've got to look up. I've got to, like, consider verticality with my son now. It's fucked. But anyway, my week has been, work, a lot of, you know, with moving of some interviews with Paris off dying. I spent 2 days studying youth mental health first aid, which was fine. It was fun. Nothing new that I really learned, but it was still it was pretty real. Like, in terms of mental health first aid, it's always a real conversation to have. But other than that, not a whole lot. So I'm going to be working at a wrestling show tomorrow with my buddies, which will be fun. I'm excited for that.
Nerd.
I know. I'm aware. Very, very aware. Speaking of nerds, though, playing games. Max, you and I, we tried to stream a game for a little bit last night. Instead, we got completely distracted by the game, failed to do proper streaming things, so we just canned the stream. And my camera's frozen. Give me one sec. I hate the cam link. The cam link is probably the most reliable, unreliable pieces of tech ever. But yeah, so you and I tried to stream Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. So... review code was provided to us by the lovely team at 2KANZ. Max, give everyone a rundown of what Tiny Tina's Wonderlands is.
So this is obviously the new the new Borderlands spin-off series. So it first started back in Borderlands 2, where they released recently re-released it as a standalone. It was Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon's Keep, and basically it's their own spin on Dungeons and Dragons, which they refer to as bunkers and badasses. And it's this this wonderful new full length game now, as opposed to just an expansion. It does change things up a little bit, which is awesome. It now has... It's fully embraced that tabletop RPG nature. It has an overworld now, so you're not constantly running around in those Borderlands-esque spaces. You do have what's very, they shrink your character down, similar to that of like a big head mode. It's really cool. And you kind of explore the land as an overview. And then when you go in to do your missions or your quests or your side quests, it then pops you into that first person Borderlands style gameplay. It's all very similar to that of Borderlands. You know, you have your four weapon slots. You've got all your inventory as it normally is. However, they've made all the RPG fantasy changes. So your grenades are now spells, and your shields are wards. You now have ring slots to equip rings and all this fun stuff. And then you have six defined character classes.
Mm-hmm.
So similar to that of Borderlands, where you had like the hunter, the berserker and all that fun stuff. They've got six very RPG-esque classes. They're all very on the nose. There's the berserker, which is kind of like a frost barbarian or berserker. I'm playing the grave warden, I believe. It's basically a necromancer, so I use a lot of magic that drains my health, but also gives it back to me, and I can summon a bunch of minions. There's a few others. There's the ability to multi-class, so you can you can go down two separate tree paths. And then, obviously, in Borderlands fashion, you have your active skills, your passive skills in the skill tree. And it's been an absolute blast. We haven't played too much of it, but what I have played, the very early game, is quite fun and whimsical. It does fully embrace that tabletop RPG silliness, and with, you know, Tiny Tina at the helm running the show, you know, she's quite the character herself. So
yeah, it's we've only put like I've only put a handful of hours in myself. I knew you put more in after our time yesterday, but you are absolutely spot on. Straight out of the gate, it really brings in that TRPG history and influence. And you talk about that open world. It's really cool because, like, you know, it's like these are your miniatures on this table, which is a nice little aesthetic. They've really taken what was the idea of Tiny Tina's dragon, was it? Assault on Dragon's Keep, and really blew it out into a full game. So rather than feeling like a skin, like, it still feels like a skin, but not as straightforward as Dragon's Keep. It runs brilliantly. So we're both playing on the PS5s. I am playing under performance mode, with the idea of better frames is ideal, especially when it comes to Borderlands. I found in the past that Borderlands has a good history of running like asshole. So I really quite like having it run super smooth here. And I'm not I've not experienced any sort of major frame drops or anything yet. Once again, still early time. Not a lot of massive boss battles or massive enemy numbers in an area. They are relatively tight encounters so far. So there's been no massive drain, I guess, because you're not using a giant open world that can stream at certain points. You are essentially creating little open worlds, like little, you know, like smaller sandboxes to play in rather than a big space. I think that's probably going to work in its favor. One of the big things for me, and one of the big things about Borderlands in general, are the characters. It's the characterization. It is the voice actors that bring it and make it fantastic. And that is exactly what is happening here. So the main voice cast, of course, Ashley Birch returns as Tiny Tina, but then you've got Andy Samberg as Valentine. You've got Wanda Sykes as a robot, whose name I've forgotten right now. You've got Will Arnett as the big bad guy, and it's fucking awesome. Like, it's got like the, because Wanda Sykes has such a unique tone in her voice, and she's very funny, which is also really helpful. Like, so she's great as the robot. Andy Samberg
plays Fret.
Fret, thank you. Yeah, and Andy Samberg's just being Andy Samberg. And, you know, if you love Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you're going to thoroughly love this, because it's just him, but with a bit more oomph on it. And it's almost like they've been left into a room to riff off each other. Like, granted, you know, Borderlands has always been primarily funny. The humor's been there. It's been pretty good. Not so much in 3. I found 3 didn't land too hard. But here, because they're playing characters, there's a lot of fun to have with that. and sort of, you know, you can be weird and wacky and whatever you want because it's all set in the mind of Tiny Tina. It's not as if there's bound in some sort of framework of reality because it's a fantasy game with guns on a tabletop. So there's a bunch of things that can sort of be played with, even in terms of, you know, like Butt Stallion, you know, and just all these other little things that are stupid and fun and that I like really got a kick out of. One of the other things, just more of a side note, I guess, for those that are interested in that space, what I loved about the character creation is it is completely open. It is genderless to any which way you want it to be. In terms of body types, it's not male and female, it's this one and that one. So the idea is you can have a more masculine style figure or a more feminine style figure, and even then you can go in and fuck with it and make it exactly the character you want to be. You can even pick the character's pronouns, so throughout the game you will then be addressed accordingly. You know, and then early on in the game you meet a character by the name of Paladin Mike, who you are led to believe there's enough information there to learn that Paladin Mike is also a trans character. Then at no point is it explicitly said, but there's enough there for you to pick up what's putting down. So if you're someone that is interested in having that sort of diversity, inclusion, freedom in your character creation, big thumbs up to Tiny Tina's Wonderlands there. It's a nice small detail, but that's one of the great details of tabletop role-playing games. You can do whatever the fuck you want in them. You can make the character that you want in them, and or how you wish to represent yourself or an ideal version of yourself, whatever. And to have that here is great because, you know, an example, we looked over like Cyberpunk as an example and how they handled character creation, especially around a gender and physical identity, not handled the best. Here, they've just gone, yeah, fuck, do whatever you want. And I think that's pretty fantastic. Because, like, you know, you're playing a more feminine body shape, but with a honking mustache and, like, a burly deep voice from memory. Like, yeah, you've had a ton of fun with it. But, yeah, the end...
The character creation is very good.
Yeah, and it's all...
It gives you a lot of options.
Yeah, and it's all very much based on a tabletop role-playing character sheet, and the idea is that, you know, you pick classes and strength and stats and attributes. And, like, it's decked out all that way, which is a ton of fun. I like that part as a character-building thing. But now, being both early on, we've not seen the large extent of enemy types or guns or weapons, and like, we've barely touched the surface. So there's only so much we can really dive into right now in terms of the game itself, but it does look incredibly promising. I know you're already keen to like run and get the season pass, and you've barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, no, I've like I said, I think I've played about 4 hours so far. So for context, without too much spoilers, my map has kind of just opened up a little bit more, which is awesome because there's things that you can interact with in the overworld. So very early on, you find out that there's it very much looks like a D&D table where there's food scraps on the side of the covering the map, and cans of soda and chips, and there's bottle caps strewn everywhere, and you can punch those bottle caps down and they become shortcuts across the overworld, which helps you get to places faster, so you don't have to load into those bigger areas, walk through them to get out to the other side. So I've just unlocked one of the big areas. I've met a few of the NPCs that make appearances in the main game, mm-hmm. The main series, and they're all so much fun. so one of the early quests is you have to get a boat mm-hmm. to sail, and it's like you can find the bard, you go and find the bard and bless his ship. Or just sail on your boat. So it gives you that option, and you know, you can go out and sail and one thing happens, or you can go and, you know, find the bard and the bard will bless your ship, and it's very funny. I've always loved the Borderlands series. Borderlands 3 unfortunately didn't hit the mark for me, and my favorite part of the Borderlands series was definitely the Tiny Tina's DLC from Borderlands 2. And this is so far in the short time that I've spent with it has 100% delivered on more of that, but better.
Yeah, I
completely. If you were a fan of that, or even a fan of tabletop RPGs, you'll have so much fun with this. You know, being multiplayer, it still has that same gunplay as what Borderlands does. The only thing is, in this, because it's a much more tabletop based game, you have random encounters in the overworld, and they're essentially just wave shooters, similar to like the arenas in Borderlands. So you'll have a set area and it's just kill all the enemies or kill this specific enemy. A lot of the times there are still those big, more open, explorable areas where you play in first person, but so far they have been less than what those outer random encounters can be. Now, they can be skipped. You can just punch the guy in the overworld and that goes away. But if you do that, you're sacrificing, you're gaining time by not having to deal with it, but you're sacrificing the XP and the loot you could have obtained by doing that encounter. So there's that risk reward of, do I want to press on and go and do the quests that I've got assigned to me, or do I want to grind these random encounters to actually get XP? Because there's a point, shortly after you got off, I went to an area and it's like, hey, this area is level X. Maybe you should consider going and doing something else for a bit. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So I went back and did some random encounters and did some side quests and did all, you know, all that fun stuff. But it's still very much that Borderlands core. You know, it's still got those vending machines where you can buy your weapons and sell all your stuff. It's still very much Borderlands gameplay, but it has this fun, whimsical overlay that really takes the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's fantastic if you're into that kind of stuff. Yeah. You play D&D, if you loved Borderlands, you know, it fully embraces it here.
Very, very much so. And we'll no doubt have more to say over the coming weeks. But one thing that we've also jumped into just a little bit, because it did happen to drop on the exact same day, is the last potential Bethesda title to make its way to PlayStation. It is Ghostwire Tokyo from Tango Gameworks. I'll try to explain it the best I can. You play a character who is like died and some spirit inhabits your body, and you've got to try save your sister for some fucking reason, and then you're in Tokyo, and then you've got to punch and finger blast a bunch of Slenderman looking dudes and yank the hearts out. I don't fucking know what this game's about. You've played more than I have. Do you know what this game's about?
So I've played the first two chapters, and from what I can tell, it's very much a revenge story. This spirit that's possessing you seems to be after the big bad of the game, who has also kidnapped you, the living body's sister. So you kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend type deal. It's a very the spirit's like, I'll lend you my power, but you have to help me get this, and you're like, well, I will help you get this, but you have to help me save my sister type thing. And it's fine. The world's gorgeous, but I find that the repetitiveness of the combat has kind of worn on me already.
Yeah.
So it's very much, I must admit, it does pace very well, where it kind of throws unlocks at you very quickly. So we're at the very start of the game, and in most of the trailers, you have access to what you referred to as finger blasting. Basically, you shoot green air darts out of your hands, and you just keep doing that until they either die or they get low enough, and then you have the ability to rip out their core. And if you rip out their core, they just instantly die. You don't have to keep wasting your essentially spirit ammo. I'm at the point where I have a few of the other elemental powers. I have fire and water. They all work in very different ways. So air is kind of your fast attack. Water is crowd control and area of effect. And fire is kind of your big honking damage.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, every combat scenario is kind of the same thing. You stand there just shooting stuff until you can rip the cores out, and then you just rinse and repeat. It gets very bland very quickly, which is a shame. Now, you do have access to weaponry. You get an unlock a ranged weapon fairly early on. But it turns out that there's parts of the game where you lose your spirit possessor kind of separates from you, and you have to work autonomously from that spirit, which means you lose access to all your cool finger blasting abilities. So you now have to deal with the evil spirits as a human, and that kind of sucks. It was very reminiscent of the playing as Mary Jane in the Spider-Man in the Spider-Man games. It's like, well, you've taken all these cool powers off me. Now it's just I've got to run around stealthy and not get caught, because if I get caught, pretty much game over. But again, I am still fairly early in. I have done the first two chapters. I've played about 6-ish hours. Again, the world is cool, but it feels like, and again, this is early, there's a lack of substance to a lot of the side quests in the area. So for context, it is an open world game, but there is essentially a death fog surrounding the town. And to disperse the fog, you have to open or cleanse the Tory gates. And you do that by using specific hand gestures. You can do that by either using just the actual thumbstick, or you can trace the symbols on the touchpad, which is kind of cool. Sometimes they're a bit finicky, but that opens up your map, and then it will show you where the side quests in the area are. One of the ones that I did early on was a grandmother asks you to find the spirit of her granddaughter, and you basically go into the house and you find this hidden blueprint of a house that the landlord has built in this like weird shrine dungeon area, and he's trapping the spirit of this little girl. And it's very, some of the stuff's very questionable, some of it's very touching, some of it's hilarious, but it's this very, very mixed matched setting.
Yeah, so
again, I'm super early in, and I don't know if that's going to change as I progress. Like, I want to progress more. I'm curious as to how both the spirit and you as the human player have the same essential alignment against this evil guy who's the guy on the front cover of the game.
Horn dude.
Kiki
or something?
Horny mask guy. I can't think of the name. But yeah, so far it's been interesting. It does look stunning, but with how combat focused this game is, I wish the combat was a little bit less repetitive.
You and I are having very different experiences, it seems, in regards to Ghostwire Tokyo. So for myself, I am not digging it at all.
I've got the benefit. I've been there, so I've been to a lot of those areas that you see in the game. It's like, hey, yeah, that's cool.
And I imagine that's a big part of it, because
you don't have that cultural
interest.
Yeah,
like, yeah, and that's a big part of it. Like, I'm not a big fan of like Japanese culture in its like that sense. Like, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go see it. Like, I don't really care. So I guess for me, a lot of that is lost. I'm like, oh, cool. It's a street. Don't care. But even then, if I look at it from just the game itself, the game originally boots up with Japanese voice audio, which is fine. I went in there and I was like, hey, look, I don't, you know, I was playing it late at night, and this might taint my thoughts on it, but I'm like, I don't really want to fucking read. I'm gonna put on English voice acting. English voice acting sucks. Like, it's just not good. And the problem that I have is that it's, which makes sense, because, you know, Tango Games Works are a Japanese studio. It's set in Japan. It feels anime as fuck, and I don't like it, because like the conversations are like meh, like what they're talking about is meh, the delivery is meh. It's just like, I can't, you must, yeah, like it's just like that real bullshit anime exposition dialogue, and I fucking hate it, and it makes it really hard to want me to progress the game further. Now, early on in the game, you are in a hospital, and there's some really cool imagery, right? And that's fun, like really cool horror imagery, like, you know, shit moving around, lights flickering, things catching on fire, there's a bunch of really cool horror aesthetics that I really dig. However, the enemies, once you beat them once, it's not very good. Like you said, you finger blast them, crank it out. That cycle is incredibly repetitive. If you were to sneak up behind them and stab them, it's the same animation every time. It's near on the same animation for every sort of yokai or spirit that you take on. So I'm not really like, I'm like, okay, well, there's not, you know, I want to see different animations, right? And even then, to me, or at least on my experience, it runs like butt. Like, I have it on performance mode with the eye, once again, frames. I am getting disgusting screen tearing. Bad. Oh, really? Screen tearing. And really bad slowdown. Like, I start running and I can see that spike in frames bad. Like, I understand, like, the game itself, like, hey, look, it is a variable frame rate. Like, it will fluctuate. I'm like, well, that's fine. But I'm not seeing it fluctuate from, like, 60 to 7. Not 7. I'm exaggerating there. Like, I don't know, 18. Like, it feels like it's really chugging. And then, like, I'll be in a tight hallway and it'll be okay. But when I'm in that outside area, it's like, oh okay, yeah, nice. And then it kind of slows down. Like, so I jumped in there. There's a bunch of different options in the settings as well. It's one of the first games I've ever seen on consoles to come with VSync support. Which is interesting. So for someone like yourself, Max, who plays on a monitor, rad. That's fucking fantastic. But
because I'm not experiencing any of those issues at all.
Yeah, so I'm playing on a 42-inch LG LED TV, and that's the problems I'm having. So I will play it in here on the monitor to see whether it does deliver a difference. But for me, it makes it near unplayable. Because like the speed, like the fluctuation in the speed rates frame rates is almost giving me motion sickness. And then without the investment in the title and itself to pull me forward, I can't look over these technical challenges and go, but the story's really good. And like even how the enemies move at you, the world does look really pretty, but this feels like a AA game. Like it feels like it almost feels like, not quite like a Phasmophobia, but like an Infliction, what was it called? Extinction, whatever the fucking game was. Like, it has that real AA Steam horror game feel. Yep. Like, it doesn't feel like this is a game made by a studio that's connected to fucking Bethesda and ZeniMax. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't meet that, what I believe, a line. So I look over at, like, Evil Within. I thought Evil Within was great. Like, yes, it was rough around the edges, but it was great. It felt like a bigger horror game than this does. Now, once again, I'm very aware that my opinions around Ghostwire Tokyo may sway heavily because of my dislike in sort of those real Japanese-y sort of games.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. I haven't played it in a very long time. Evil Within and Evil Within 2 were very much, to a degree, on rails, right?
They
weren't open world games.
Very much so. They were very reminiscent of like old Resident Evil games, is what, okay, I dug about, yep, them. Yeah. So yes, compared to Ghostwire, which is open world, this Evil Within was to the point. But like it really, yeah, it's just not landing for me in any possible way. Now, I can completely understand why they shat this one out, while there was no hype coming into it at all, because like the trailer, if you look at the Accolades trailer or the release trailer, I'm like, damn, why am I not playing this game? But it's one of those things that in the trailer looks great, but then in execution, you go, I feel like I'm being sold false things. Like, there's a reason that the trailer itself is mostly cinematics and the occasional fucking hand gestury parts or actual gameplay, because the straight gameplay ain't very good. Which sucks, and I hate having, because like we're very lucky. We get to pick games that we like. But with this one, I was like, well, you wanted to play it, this was
very much a Max game.
And I wanted to jump into it because it is the last, potentially the last Bethesda development studio, publishing company, PlayStation game. I was like, oh, well, I need to see that for that, at least that reason alone. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I should have just probably left it at Deathloop. Deathloop was pretty good. I didn't really dig it, but like, it's good. This is, yeah. It really feels like, can we just shove this game out so that way our exclusivity deal's done? But also, yeah, Tango, both Evil Within 1 and 2 got like 7s anyway, so they're not known to be an exceptional studio, and I don't think Ghostwire Tokyo will be changing anyone's beliefs and or opinions around that. Anyways, before we jump into the news,
I've got one more game.
Oh, what else been playing?
I've been playing Returnal, the big Ascension came out this week. So I dove in and tried the multiplayer mode. So basically, when you spawn in now on your map, there's basically a glowing silver sphere. You walk up to it. It's like, hey, do you want to host? Do you want to join? Or do you want to play publicly? So I jumped in and joined a completely random person. It's pretty solid multiplayer game. It's not something that you can kind of team up and work in tandem. It's kind of just there's an extra person taking out the enemies. But it is a game where the slightest bit of lag will get you killed.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a great connection, what you're seeing on your screen and what you're dodging on your screen has already hit you.
Yeah.
And you're taking damage anyway. And then obviously there was the big Tower of Sisyphus included in this big update, which is essentially the very arcadiness of Housemarque, where it's just an endless tower of terror. So on my first run, I made it to phase 2, floor 20. So there's 20 floors per phase, and then at the end of the 20th floor, there is a boss that shifts you to the next phase. And then every time you kill a boss, you get a permanent suit malfunction that cannot be repaired in any way, shape, or form. From my experience, I've run this tower about 4 or 5 times now. Every single time it has been a weapon damage nerf. Either if you're standing still, you do 75% less damage, or if you're airborne, you do 50% less damage. And the airborne one is rough because you are constantly jumping and dodging and ducking and diving and weaving and... They're very small, contained rooms. Some of the rooms are freebies. They're like, hey, here's just some health for you to pick up, and that's your floor this turn. Or here's a chest to open that'll have a new weapon. Or here's a side room with some keys and an item pickup, or you can fabricate something that'll increase your max health or your max damage. They've also added a new type of weapon. For the life of me, I can't think of the actual term, but essentially it is a usable super weapon. They're essentially alien guns. You can only have one type of them, though. So if there's two separate ones, what it does is it says, you can pick this up and you'll have two of them, but we're going to change it to this one that you're picking up now. So one's essentially like a super machine gun. One's a laser beam. I've had a shotgun. So if you have the shotgun one and then there's the laser beam one, if you pick up the laser beam, you'll get two uses of the laser beam weapon. You lose your shotgun usage completely.
Okay.
So they stack, but they all become the same one that you just picked up, which is both good and bad because sometimes some are significantly better than the others, but it's always better to have more of them and sacrifice that damage output for more of them.
So with the multiplayer, did you find that the enemy numbers increased?
No.
So it's the exact same game, just a second person.
It's the exact same game with an extra person. Well, so
this is their easy mode.
You are hamstrung by the host. So if the host hasn't unlocked everything, you lose all of your unlocks. So if you don't have the grapple hook yet, you don't get to take your grapple hook into their run.
Okay. Well, apparently in terms of progress, it only really progresses the host. So you would come in and support me if we were were to run it.
Yes.
All right. Well, cool. Because I think we can still get credits. I'm going to rely on you very heavily. Now, thankfully, you and I both have exceptional internet connections. So I
and
don't.
We live like right near each other.
Yeah, so we live right down the road from each other, so it should be fine. I don't see that being too much of a challenge. So we might be worthwhile reinstalling just to see if we can do it.
Yeah.
But so is this update worth it? Is if you've put Returnal away, should you jump back in?
I mean, it's a free update. It costs you nothing. And if you're a fan of Returnal and you like, if you're one of those players that likes to score hunt or is competitive in any way, shape, or form, this tower mode is just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, it's endless. It will keep going until you die.
Beautiful.
I had a look at for context, my first run, I scored just over 1 million points. Mm-hmm. And there's people on the leaderboards in the hundreds of millions. So I am very bad in comparison.
That's just everyone else around you. So holy actual shit, that's impressive. Yeah. All right, now, before we jump into the news, as we always, it's the time to do some shilling. So, as we said at the start of the show, the team over at Manscaped have joined us and helping support the show. So they've provided a promo code. So if you go to au.manscaped.com, use the promo code FTP, save yourself 20% off, get free worldwide shipping. It's good stuff. There's a bunch of things you can buy over there, including the lawnmower 4.0, which is their body hair grooming kit, which I tried very difficultly this morning, Max, to shave my shoulder hair with. I don't really have a lot of body hair. I just get it in weird places and I have really gross shoulder hair. So here I am trying to like do it in the mirror by myself, and then I'm realizing there's a bunch of shit missed, but thankfully there's a little bit of length in the thing. My back probably looks fucking fucked right now. But it can do it.
I'm just picturing you now, like taping it to the wall and just rubbing your back.
I did consider that. I was like, eh. So like, I'm sure there's a weird patchiness on my back. Thankfully, no one sees my back, so we're all good. It's not too bad. But in terms of, you know, the marketing for the trimmer is for your nethers. But it can also be used for other body hairs, like your chest hair, your back hair, your pit hair. If you were needed to be more aerodynamic, Max, you've used it on your face.
I have.
To trim, not trim, now. Trim the beard hair
obviously,
down.
Because obviously it's a bit unruly at the moment. Mm.
And then, of course, there are the formulations, which is their body products, including 2-in-1 shampoos, a body wash, etc., etc. You can buy them in a cool pack as well. I'm wearing it right now and I smell fucking fantastic. So I highly recommend you go check them up. Not even like because of the promo code, just because personally, I really dig the smell of the Manscaped products. Max, before we do a very quick one today, did you have anything you want to add?
No, after you know, using the nose hair trimmers last week, I am very well maintained.
Just breathing easy.
It's one of those things that you don't have to it does the job very well. You don't have to, and my hair doesn't grow like gnarly fast. So that also helps.
Yeah. No. Is there something to do under the nose? Just that little bit of razor never gets. So that's the one challenge that I've had with the single blade razor is getting up in this business, because my mustache grows fucking way faster than the rest of my beard for some reason. It's horrible. And I don't tend to have
maybe
a lot of success.
Just embrace the stash.
No, but I look so like, you know, molesty. It's not good. I'm not going to, I shouldn't probably talk about that in an ad read, but thankfully I look less molesty when I use the Manscaped Plow 2.0, the razor blade, to trim my beard hair. So I smell good. I don't smell creepy. I look great. And if I was creepy and just took my pants off, they'd be like, well, at least that's maintained. au.manscaped.com. Use the promo code FTP. Save yourself 20% off and free worldwide shipping. Thank you for supporting us, Manscaped, even though after that ad read, you may not want to. All right, Max, let's get into the news. This is a section called Inform the Players, where we tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation.
Well, Ryan,
I love the noise gate cut out all your laughing. So to anyone listening, all they would just hear is just no response. Like, Max has given Ryan nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Spartacus, Ryan, it's approaching.
Allegedly. Again.
Sony Group is preparing to introduce a new video game subscription service for the PlayStation as early as next week, says people familiar with the plans. The service, which has been in development under the codename Spartacus, is Sony's answer to Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass, a sort of Netflix for video games that has amassed more than 25 million subscribers. Sony's will debut with a splashy lineup of hit games from recent years, says the people who requested anonymity because the plans are private. Funny that. Some additional insight on Sony's revamped PS Plus subscriptions comes courtesy of Nico Partners analyst Daniel Ahmad, who explained on Twitter, quote, Sony's services revamp isn't looking to compete one-to-one with Xbox Game Pass, and it's leaning into adding additional value through a tiered approach. It's more about combining its two existing services into one and adding some extra perks. PS Now growth was low. So obviously the big takeaway from this, which we've known all along, is that the big difference between Games Pass and what Spartacus turns out to be is that Sony will not be releasing their first party studio games day and date like Microsoft do on Games Pass.
It appears that is the case, which is fine. Which is, we kind of thought they wouldn't be doing it anyway, because it made no sense from a business perspective of or at least how our Sony and PlayStation want to run. So they're not going to follow the exact model of Game Pass. Now it does, as you said, we talked about a thousand times before. It does appear to, you know, reaffirm the idea of bringing PS Now and PS Plus together with the additional extras. Now we've talked to this almost ad nauseum at this point about what Spartacus could be. And we just discussed it here as well. Like, well, what the fuck does this mean for Australia? Australia has never had PS Now, nor do we really have the correct the internet infrastructure to support a service like PlayStation Now. So the conversation here is, how are we getting fucked? Are we going to get some sort of bastardized version of this? Because, like, oh, it comes, you know, the biggest tier, the most expensive tier, comes with all this stuff and game streaming. We don't have that here. It's like, oh, well, we still have the tier available in Australia, but you just got to pay the full amount and not get all the features. Where do you see that? Like, how do you see this working?
It's hard. I mean, there are certain parts of Australia that will be able to support game streaming.
Like us, I guess.
And then there's parts that can't. I mean, in the long run, if the only difference between the highest tier and the middle tier is the game streaming, I guess we in Australia just buy that second tier.
Mm.
And we download the games and play them as opposed to streaming them. I mean, personally, I always prefer to download over stream when I can or where I can, because I want it running at, like, the best possible way on my hardware without having to, you know, buffer or anything like that. It just makes sense to allow the download. But again, it depends on what these price points are.
Yeah. Like, I've never streamed a game, and I have no intentions to, for the exact same reasons that you've just highlighted. I don't want to deal with lags and all the nonsense and whatever. I just want to play a fucking game. And
some games have frame rate issues. Why would you want to add that?
Yeah.
Add to that by adding lag in.
It's even more frame rate.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's some good news coming out of this week, though, Max. So right now, GDC, Games Developers Conference, happening in California somewhere. I think it's Santa Monica, somewhere around there. But apparently, PSVR 2 is playable behind closed doors at this event. And there's already a lot of buzz seeping out of the show. Chet Falizek, a Valve veteran, shared the following on Twitter, quote, "Had one of those VR moments today playing in the new PSVR 2 HMD. I don't know what that means. I presume it's a developer kit. You know where the world just feels different when you return? So good. Thanks, Shuhei Yoshida and Greg Rice," I presume they use their handles, "for the demo and chat." This was post... So this was post... What? This was post... What?
This is a post.
Fucking hell, Max.
My typing is terrible.
This post was later shared on the Reset Era forum, where one user mentioned the comments sounded hyperbolic, and they returned with, quote, "It's not hyperbolic," replied a Truant Pixel developer who's working on Runner, a motorcycle game for PSVR 2. "As of yet, there's no further information on what kind of demo Sony is showing, but PSVR 2 presentations are planned for GDC throughout the remainder of the week." So we may not know what they're playing, but we know that we'll probably have more information come next week, which is cool. Now, the problem that I have here, it's the same time when it... the cynic in me goes, oh, okay, this is like when people went and saw, you know, the Jared Leto Suicide Squad, and were like, oh, you know, a week before release, like, oh, it's fucking fantastic. Everyone's tweeting about how fantastic the movie was, and it came out and it's garbo. What the fuck were these people talking about? Like, why, you know, I'm always instantly hesitant. Without anything to back it up or any information we have to support it, I presume it's someone just jerking dick. Now, we as a PlayStation show should be like, oh, fantastic, PSVR 2, everyone's getting hands on, everyone's happy with it. We don't drink that Kool-Aid. I'm like, cool, give us more. Show us more. Tell us more. Let us see something in action. Let us see someone play it in action. We may not get there yet, but it looks as if at least the back end of this week, by the sounds, we will have more information about PSVR 2, hopefully. And some of the things that I'm bitching and whinging about right here is mute. Now, because like I remember going and seeing PSVR for the first time. It was at PAX 2016, I think. I don't remember. It was a big, long time ago. I remember getting some media hands-on, and I went in there and I played what was to become the heist on PSVR Worlds. And I distinctly remember playing and being like, holy actual fuck, is this the new way of playing everything? I was... So in terms of someone coming out going, oh, this is the fucking future, I understand that, because PSVR is life-changing. Like, in terms of like, it's actually... game-changing in the truest sense of the word. Now, granted, I haven't played VR in the longest time, so even if I booted up a game right now, I'd probably have a very similar response because it's been so long. So, with it being a small hands-on as well, I also wonder if it's like, well, what does this mean for long-term play? Is it because it's a short burst? Everyone's like, ooh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I being too cynical, Max?
No, but at least we know that it can't be worse than the current iteration of PSVR.
It's true.
Like, just the addition of the new controllers alone will completely change the immersion of what is PlayStation VR. Because the PSVR ones are dumb.
Yeah, the Move ones. Like, super,
are, yeah. A super old tech.
Well, they're like 14 years old now, 15 years old almost. It's absolutely insane.
Moving on. Well, talking about updates... we have some firmware and app updates. So Game Base and Parties have had a complete overhaul. Game Base is now divided into three sections: Friends, Parties, and Messages. This is coming from the new firmware update on PlayStation 5. Parties are now being referred to as voice chats. Your friends list is now filed under the Friends tab for easier access, and friend requests and search are now also found there. It looks like it's going to be easier to initiate share play within a group as well. Trophies have also been given a refreshed look, with trophy cards and trophy lists given more colorful now. Additionally, the trophy tracker can now suggest trophies for you to earn whilst playing a game. In a new PS blog post, the company has announced that variable refresh rates will indeed be coming to PlayStation 5, quote, in the coming months. This functionality will be supported on any HDMI 2.1 compatible device, both TVs and PC monitors. Sony goes on to state that previously released PlayStation 5 games, quote, can be fully optimized for VRR through a game patch, and that future titles may launch with VRR supported, which makes sense. You'll also be able to enable VRR even on games that don't fully support it. This may have a varied result, however, but you'll be able to turn it off and on whenever you like. Also, the big one that I have used tons this week...
You have, you fuck!
The PlayStation app... in Australia has now been updated, so you can share your captured videos super easy now.
You've sent me like 35 videos this week, and it's all of you just fucking people up in Elden Ring. Being like, this game's not that hard. That's all you've done all week. Remind me very hard, like, I'm good at this game and you're not. Thanks, Max.
I mean, I literally, one of the videos is literally me at the end game boss standing there just blasting him with a Kamehameha while he's not moving.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
The game doesn't seem that difficult. Yeah.
You do make the game look really easy in those videos you are sending.
I mean, to be fair, I'm like super glass cannon. If a boss sneezes in my direction, I die.
Yeah. look, one of the things I noticed as well is the downloads and uploads tab has altered as well. At least for me, it stays up there permanently now, where it used to only appear if there was something downloading or something uploading. It's there permanently now, and you can go in there and sort of, you know, see a full list of everything as it is, so it's not falling under the notifications and it's not lost when something's not downloading. So that's pretty cool. It took me a while to realize, and I was like, because like the buttons that you press to make it go away has changed. But that's not too bad. Other than that, yeah, cool. New updates. I know there were some people having updates problems with the update as well, in terms of having it connect to network connectivity issues as a response. Yeah,
there was a PlayStation Plus issue that was solved within like 24 hours.
Yeah, it was real quick.
I know that I had the issue with Elden Ring where it's like, you do not have an active PlayStation Plus subscription. You are not allowed to play online.
Like, fuck off, like,
I mean, that seems dumb. And then I'd turn Rocket League on, and Rocket League's, you're good, man. You've got it. You can play online. It's like, okay, It's weird. There was only some select titles.
And I should also mention that there is an update for your controller as well. So when you boot the game up, when you boot your console up, it'll make you want to plug it in and update it. So I don't know what they do, but that's pretty cute. All right, one of the other big bit of news to come out this week, Max, is the PlayStation family is still growing. So Sony has announced this week.
New child.
Yeah, so it is a brand new child this time too. They haven't adopted, like they've actually almost birthed this child. Sony has announced this week of the acquisition of Jade Raymond's development team, Haven Studios. And the value of this deal is still currently unknown. This is the new studio that was developed, created in the last 18 months or so and has yet to put out a game and is currently working on a PlayStation exclusive live service title. This partnership was announced around a year ago, but now the platform holder is making Haven an official part of PlayStation Studios. PlayStation head Jim Ryan describes the developer as, quote, an emerging studio with an exceptional team of talent, end quote. And this is the company's first Canadian studio. There's a couple of reasons here, Max, why they would want to do this. Because this is a little bit unorthodox compared to how Sony has previously acquired studios.
I mean, clearly they're happy with the work they're doing, and if they buy them now before they release anything, they're cheap.
That's the bit. Yeah, so that's part of my reasons to why. So what's essentially happening is Sony has a strong history of buying studios after they have grown. They've demonstrated themselves, and then they've jumped in. But with Haven, Haven's not done anything. They're still relatively new, and essentially what they're buying now is straight up potential. Now, Jade Raymond is, I think, one of the creative heads of the studio. Now, she herself has not had a lot of creative history. She has been a producer on many Ubisoft titles and did spend a big hunk of time over at, I want to say the Ouya, but it's not the Ouya. What the fuck was it called?
Stadia,
thank you. Google. Yeah, over at Stadia with Google. So that's, she does certainly have expertise in running studios, at least from a business standpoint. So I you hear people like, oh, but she's not creative. That's fine. Like, essentially in my job, I'm a producer. I help create the fucking programs. But my job now is the business side of them as well. I do still have my creative involvements. And I imagine Jade's going to be very much the same. It's actually going to be really handy having someone that knows the creative while also having the back-end knowledge around the business and production of a game rather than just its creation. But you were spot on. One of the other reasons they're going to want to jump in now is obviously they see some great potential in this studio, and it's going to cost them substantially less to buy them now compared to when the game releases and if it does really, really well. Especially as we're seeing the almost exponentially growing price for studios these days. Like it's baffling to think that like Insomniac has picked up like $250 million when Bungie was bought for like $1 billion or whatever. Like it's like there is no way you can continue to pump out that kind of money. So at least buy them now and pay, and get, you know, give them the money they need to grow and become a high-end Sony studio. Because look, Sony is also not afraid to shut down a bunch of studios. They have Evolution, Zipper, Sony London, you know what I mean? Big. There's been a ton that have all been canned. So Sony will do it. Guerrilla Cambridge is another one as well. You know what I mean? If they want to pull a studio down, they totally will. So there's that. That's something to consider as well. And Canada, man. Like Sony, it doesn't hurt to have a studio in Canada so they can start pulling fucking talent and live service talent as well. A whole different category, a whole different genre of talent they yet to really work with Sony's focus on single player action adventure sort of games. It's although we don't know whether it's going to pay off, it does feel like a bold strategy, Cotton, but I'm sure
they know what they're doing.
I would agree. Obviously, the people at, you know, the individuals in power at Sony have likely seen what they're working on. They've seen its potential, and they're going to have much more informed stances than you or I would, as two random fucks in Australia in a very low tier PlayStation podcast. But at least from where I'm sitting, I'm like, all right, I can see why this would be an incredible potential pickup. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, very much the same. Like we started off, it's good to get it. Sometimes it's good to get in early. They're obviously very happy with the work they've done for this live service game that they have been developing for Sony. It would make sense for them to jump in early and then grow them and help them grow in a way that will benefit Sony in the long term while they're still getting in early enough where they can be, they're not set in their ways, so to speak.
That's true, because like in terms of, because one of the biggest things that we've talked about on, and it's been discussed quite across the gaming discussion around studio acquisitions, it's culture, right? Mm. Like you can't, if you buy culture, if you buy a company already comes with culture, and then having to change that and mold that to reflect what your company is already doing.
It's what Microsoft's going to struggle with the acquisition of Activision Blizzard, I think.
Yeah, and every other one they've picked up, you know what I mean? Like that, that's the major challenge. But at least, and like, but once again, Sony had the similar idea, but everyone that they have purchased, at least up until the last like 18 months, has been someone that they've worked with for a number of games. So they know them, so they know the company and they know the culture, they know how they will fit. Yeah. With here, they get to literally build and shape the culture as it happens, and that is way more powerful than having to change. Because if you start you know, as someone myself in terms of my job trying to change the culture of a greater company, whew, is that hard work, and it's a fight that doesn't seem to stop. So if you can go in before you get people set in their ways, as you said, smart call.
Well, you know what they say, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Damn right. And also, Shane in the chat, not just is essentially when we talk about two random fucks in Australia, he goes, two sexy random fucks. So I appreciate the very accurate description of both Max and I.
All right, well, let's talk some Ubi spill. With E3 all but gone, publishers have been reaching out to their audiences on their own terms. One of these companies is Ubisoft. And as per industry know-it-all Tom Henderson, they have something coming up. Apparently, the French publisher is preparing a massive showcase which will potentially include updates on almost 20 different titles. There's no word on when this will take place, but this being Ubisoft, knowledge of the event isn't the only news. Henderson also has his hands on the on chunks of the Running Order also. Firstly, there's the usual suspects, Skull and Bones, Beyond Good and Evil 2, and that Rabbids crossover starring a certain pipe plugger. So, more Mario! But then there's the more juicy stuff, like a third entry into the Crew series and a sequel to Immortals Phoenix Rising.
Oh, I like that one.
Ubisoft Montpellier, the Rayman Legends team, is allegedly working on a brand new Prince of Persia, which has been inspired by modern 2D titles similar to Ori and the Blind Forest.
Okay, okay.
Don't worry though, Ryan. Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake hasn't been canned yet and is still on the cards. Elsewhere, titles like The Division, Heartland, and X-Defiant are likely also to feature. There's even speculation that a smaller-scale Assassin's Creed spin-off, codenamed Rift, could appear during the showcase as well. Henderson does caution that not every in-development project may be ready for the prime time, but clearly the French publisher has a lot to talk about. A
couple of different things here that piqued my interest. Apparently, Skull and Bones is, well, obviously, we've been discussed before. Because
it's not dead in the water?
It's not dead in the water. Apparently, the Singapore government have a big financial stake in it. And if the game doesn't deliver, then they have to fork out a ton of coin back to the Singapore government. So that game's going to come out regardless. Beyond Good and Evil 2 has been quiet for a number of years. That's cool. The new Mario vs. Rabbids, I thought that was meant to be coming out this year. Maybe early next. So I'm keen to see more for that. I really enjoyed the first one. A sequel to Immortals? Gimme, gimme, gimme. Max, you got to finish that for your backlog. Hurry up.
I do.
Prince of Persia, a 2D Prince of Persia based on Ori. Ori's 2D platforming is fucking fantastic. And with the original Prince of Persia being a science... very, like, 8-bit, if not less bit, side-scroller, I love it. I have such a strong love and memory and nostalgia with Prince of Persia and in terms of the original one. So when they released Prince of Persia Classic on PS3, I was like, take my fucking money. And then if they're going to do that again, take my fucking money again. I love that old Prince of Persia game. Division Heartland, that's been quiet for a while. So I'd be good to see more about that. X-Defiant, no longer Tom Clancy's X-Defiant. That's been renamed in the last couple of weeks. So Tom Clancy can stop doing 360s in his grave, because that game is going to suck. It is going to die so hard. Now, Max, does anything of this jump out at you? Because I think I have a bit of an interest in more Ubi titles than you do.
I'm on the same page as you. Like, I'd love to see an Immortals sequel. The Crew's kind of cool. I didn't mind the first two.
Was the Crew the one where you went between plane and sea and land?
I think that was Crew 2.
That was Crew 2, yeah. That was fun. Because you could be like, you could be flying and then just go, boat, you know, bonk. Yeah, it's awesome.
I want Beyond Good and Evil 2.
I don't.
But at this point, it's I don't know if it's ever coming.
No. It's the last Guardian for Ubisoft.
Pretty much. But yeah, it all seems interesting. They always put on a good show, and they definitely have lots to talk about.
Yeah, look, there's another greater thing here is like how when it comes to E3, how's Ubisoft going to talk about things?
Well, didn't they have like an Ubisoft Next last year? And they just
they did.
What we're doing? Like, it's not anything new for them.
Yeah, but if they do it in a room, like when you do a pre-recorded video, they can just go, "Hi, here you go." But like, if they're going to start doing a stage show, like they have been. Well,
I don't know if it will be.
Yeah, as long as I don't have Aisha Tyler hosting it again, because she's not very good. Max, this one.
Speaking of not very good.
Yeah, I didn't know how to transition this even any better.
Take Two want to take more of your money?
Yeah, they want my money. Because Grand Theft Auto Online, Max, is getting an optional monthly subscription. That's right, because you haven't paid enough for GTA 5. This service, imaginatively entitled GTA Plus, the membership, which will be exclusive to the next gen, or the current gen, I'm going to call it, because it is the fucking current gen now, version of the game, including the PS5. It will cost $5.99 US per month and will dollop users with a variety of in-game perks. Existing players will not have to pay for GTA Plus to play, although a PS Plus, different Plus, subscription is still required to play the game. The big thing here is that you will get $500,000 GTA dollary dues every single month. I don't know why I went New Zealand there. Every single month. Deposit directly into your in-game account. A Bull Shark card costs about $10 in real money, making this potentially a good purchase for those who regularly spend money on those microtransactions anyway. Because along with that, you'll also get some other perks, including free cars, free businesses, and more. The first batch of freebies include exclusive early access to the Principal Devest 8, and a free Heyo Special Works upgrades, along with the HSW Orange Trip and HSW CMYK Glitch Leveries, which are cars. You'll also get a complimentary auto shop in La Mesa, and if you already own an auto shop elsewhere, you can relocate for free. So yes, if you own a car, like already own this, and like they went their upgrade to businesses, if you already own the business, they'll just give you the next one. Just go, hey, you can trade the other one in. Now you got this fancy pants one. I do wonder whether these will be exclusive sites, like exclusive businesses and workshops or whatever. So that way you're like, hey, this is a really cool one, but you must have GTA Plus.
I would have, I don't know. It'd be similar to that of, because GTA Online have a thing with Twitch Plus, whatever the bonus thing for Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
They have deals. Should be noted that from the announcement of GTA Online coming to PS5, Sony has been giving you $1 million a month for free if you've been claiming it.
That game like $10 million, it was red.
So, I mean, yes, to a degree, if you're one of those people that buys shark cards on a monthly basis, then it is cheaper to spend the $6 per month instead of the $10 per month to get the same value, in-game value. But man, like, come on.
See, this makes me think about the future of what Grand Theft Auto is going to be. I don't see Grand Theft Auto returning to what it was. I think whatever comes next will essentially be called, I think it will just be called Grand Theft Auto. Not Grand Theft Auto 6, just Grand Theft Auto. Because one of the things we've talked about in the past, and the rumor mill, was that you're going to be able to go to Liberty City, Vice City, San Andreas. There's also mention about being able to go to London, you know, so that's essentially going to all the routes of everything that GTA has ever done. And having all that crammed into a single player, would be intense. But as an online platform, ooh, isn't that the most ultimate way to play Grand Theft Auto? So in terms of, and then that also allows you to drop lots of multiplayer DLC, single player DLC, because everything already exists in that world. And then all they have to do is just build on that world throughout the years. And it's essentially the way Destiny 2 was, right? Destiny 2 is this, and they just keep adding and adding and adding and adding and adding and adding. And that's what they've been trying to do with GTA 5. But the problem is, it's stuck solely in San Andreas. And San Andreas as a location will get boring really quick. So be able to then go to other locations and expand that world. And not that that level of development ain't going to be cheap. But I say that knowing full well that Rockstar Games are like pocket overflowing dollars. They don't need GTA Plus.
I mean, for a start, they've sold this game on three separate console generations.
Correcto mundo. It's one of the, it's one of the most best-selling entertainment properties to ever fucking exist, right? They don't need the money. But I understand why they're doing it. So that's whatevs, right? But it's essentially keeping people engaged. Yeah. I read this as GTA 6 is fucking yonkers away. So let's keep people entertained in the interim. Plus, they just gave away a bunch of copies of GTA Online, presumably. They're gonna make some coin in the interim. And if people got GTA Online for free, and they go, oh, it's only $5 a month. Well, I got the game for free. Fuck it. I'm really enjoying it. Who cares? Hey, it's still cheaper than the Fallout 76 pass, so
there's that. And then 3 months' time, you forget that you got a subscription, and then they charge you for the next 30 years.
Yeah, pretty much. Then you forget, and then, yeah, 9 years later, you've paid $11 billion into GTA Online. What do you think of my theory, Max?
I did that with Elder Scrolls Online.
What do you think of my theory?
It makes sense. I think the GTA world style thing is a logical choice. I guess it depends on how long they've been working on it. Like, have they been working on it since they released this bastard back on the PS3?
No, they're working on Red Dead.
So, you know, I'd like to think that that's where they're going, but I don't think it.
But they don't even have to do it that way. They can promise that day one, they're like, here's GTA, here's Grand Theft.
The issue is, whatever they do next, it has to integrate with the current GTA Online, because can you imagine the backlash from the players where they just instantly lose all their crap because the new GTA is
out? That's the advantage, right? If they can then integrate, they've already got San Andreas as a world that can already be supported in this online platform, right? So they don't have to rebuild San Andreas. They just connect it to this greater world.
Yeah, but is it going to look like, say, World of Warcraft, where you go to the newer zones and everything's fucking gorgeous, and then you go to the base game or San Andreas and it just looks like shit comparatively?
I think initially, and then they can just reskin it like at some point. Because didn't World of Warcraft do that as well? Didn't they reskin a bunch of stuff? And like, granted, yeah, the base of it's going to look the same anyway. But yeah, if they can then open up other areas, you can still be the same character, but you now can wander over to here and to there and to drift in between.
As Shane puts in the chat, can you imagine if your favorite game or franchise got the same amount of post-launch support as GTA 5? I'd be stoked to pay a monthly fee.
Very, very true. And that's certainly true. So like, if you want to look at it, we're looking at it very pessimistically, but from an optimistic standpoint, you can't fault it.
Yeah.
You absolutely cannot fault it, because up until now, GTA 5 has been nothing but free post-launch support. Granted, it's microtransactioned up the butthole, but it's still free support.
Quick bitties, Ryan. Oh, I can't even spell Far Cry right. Jesus.
Far Cry 6.
Far Cry 6 has a new Stranger Things-inspired mission available for free. Uncharted is one of the highest grossing video game movies of all time, with $339 Ooh. Million dollars worldwide.
Holy shit.
The developer behind the Bloodborne PlayStation 1 remake is making Bloodborne Kart.
Okay, sure.
Fortnite's new no build mode could be a permanent addition.
Good! It's one of the most shittest things about Fortnite, apart from it being Fortnite, is that when, like, you know, you find someone, you've got them in your sight, you unload one bullet on them, next thing you're standing in front of a fucking, you know, beautiful 400 square metered manor, and they're living in, they've got a nice little bathroom and a little patio area. I'm like, what the fuck just happened?
Pretty much. A new Witcher game has been announced, will be developed in Unreal Engine 5.
Big point to note here, is this the first time that CD Projekt Red have stepped outside of their Red engine, their own proprietary engine? So this means, ideally, it's going to run better and play better. Because when you're working in your own engine, there's no one to support you creating. And if you face problems like they did with Cyberpunk, unless it's just you.
I also think that Epic have a...
they have a stake?
Deal with them.
I believe they might do.
Babylon's Fall development will continue as planned despite its very poor reception.
Yeah, they came out and said, like, oh, we've got season 2 done. We're about to start season 3. I'm like, motherfuckers, people aren't playing season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Ball strategy gone.
And the Gran Turismo 7 currency blunder is being fixed. In April, there will be a few quality of life patches, increasing winnings in the back end of the races, for the further down the track races. And all players will receive $1 million of in-game credits to spend. They're also upgrading the maximum currency you can hold from 20 million to 100 million. Fans were not impressed that all their races basically got halved. So in the back end races, there will now be up to 100% increases of their payouts.
Look, as someone that's kind of early-ish in the game, they're like, hey, here's $1 million. I'm like, I could do so much with this. So I was very, very happy to receive a free $1 million e-doos. So I ain't complaining there at all. Upcoming games, Max, because once again, PlayStation Australia did not provide us a top 10 best-selling games. Dropping the ball. This is like 3 months in a row now. This is insane. IKAI, PS4 and PS5, March 29th. Crusader Kings 3 coming to PS5 on also March 29th. Agent Intercept, PS4, PSVR on March 30. Weird West coming to PS4 March 31st. Now we can mention that we have access to this title. We cannot say anything about it, but we can talk about it because there are video previews and stuff that can go up now. And we're talking about how I was tempted to upload some video preview, but I thought, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to wait and I'm going to stream the bastard because it could be some ton of fun to stream. And then finally, Lego Star Wars, The Skywalker Saga for PS4 and PS5 coming April 5th. Now, if you want to, if you're interested, good friend of the show, Jerd Man. He got himself some nice early hands-on access preview to Skywalker Saga. Go check out his YouTube, youtube.com/Jerdman, J-U-R-D-M-A-N. Get a good little taste of what's to come in Skywalker Saga. Well, that does bring us to the end of the show, Max. Thank you, everyone, for joining us once again. Hope you all have a lovely rest of your week. We appreciate each and every one of you that takes time out of your week to listen to us bullshit, talk about fucking sad news at the start, and then our ball sacks, and then some games in there a little bit occasionally. That's the end of the show. All right, send us home.
Well, everyone, this PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can. Come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you are watching us on YouTube, be sure to like, scribble a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts, other assorted shit with our logos on it, or you can help support us by supporting the brands that support us, just like Manscaped. If you head over to au.manscaped.com, use the promo code FTP, save yourself 20% off and get free worldwide shipping. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For The Players.